Hey friends, welcome to Cashing In on Content Marketing. I'm Amanda Milligan, the marketing director at Fractal. And every week on the show, I interview marketing experts about ways to know the value of your work and get buy-in for your strategies. This week, we're exploring why content marketers should care about machine learning. I'm joined by senior analytics consultant and freelance SEO, Jess Peck. And I'm very excited about this conversation because it's a topic I know incredibly little about. So I'm bound to learn a lot. Welcome to the show, Jess.
Thanks, Amanda. It's great to be here.
These interviews are particularly fascinating to me, like I said, because I know I'm probably going to ask terrible questions, but I have so much fun along for the ride, learning as we go. So thank you in advance for bearing with me.
No worries. And there's no such thing as a terrible question, especially when you're getting into a weird topic like machine learning. I think the questions for ML are all valid.
That's actually a really good reminder. I shouldn't even say that. So thank you for saying that. So let's start with the basics. What is machine learning?
Machine learning, I'm going to go for the kind of sardonic way of saying it. It's a way for machines to learn. But what that is really is trying to give computers the ability to find patterns in data without having to explicitly program them to find patterns in data. In more traditional programming, the person writes a program to find like everyone who's over 21 in this group from our analytics data. And machine learning would be, are there any patterns in this data that we're not seeing? And can I train an algorithm to find and respond well to that kind of pattern?
Okay, I think that makes sense to me. I think about programming and the way that you're just saying it, where it's almost just like a more efficient version where you're trying to train it to do that on its own rather than having to say manually everything it has to do. That makes sense.
Yeah.
go ahead.
I was going to say a really easy kind of way you can see how machine learning is both a positive and a negative is spam blockers, for email. So more traditional spam blockers will just be we know exclamation marks and cell by capital letters, misspellings, that all tends to be a spam thing. So we're just going to say, if it has this exclamation mark, if it says buy now, cheap, or that kind of thing, we're just going to assume it's spam and flag it and put it in your trash. But Google and other email providers have been training their spam filters on data. So the spam filters are no longer so one-on-one and are trained to kind of try and recognize what spam is. Which in some ways is great because it means it can kind of figure out what spam is without it being so direct, but it also means it's going to end up flagging things incorrectly.
I see. Okay. So it's pulling more of the spam out of your inbox, but as a result, it's probably pulling things that you didn't want in your spam folder as it is trying to learn.
Yeah. My grandparents will send me emails that get flagged as spam sometimes because, they're just a little, not so technically savvy. They'll be using the iPad and the sizes will be off. They might forward me a chain email that they really want me to see, and it just gets automatically sent to the trash. And then, I have to respond and be like, hey, I didn't get your email because Gmail just assumed it was garbage. Sorry.
So there are pros and cons is what I'm hearing.
Yep.
So how did you get into machine learning? You're working in SEO. Let's talk about how these tie together. Why did machine learning become a topic of interest for SEOs?
So I think I got into SEO. I used to work at Stone Temple, which became Perficient. And I worked with their tools. So the internal tools we used for checking out websites. And I would help kind of build and QA those. And we would also always be looking for new ways to analyze content and analyze links and analyze the algorithm, and looking for ways to bring the algorithm into our day-to-day work, right?
Mm-hmm.
So because my background is very heavily SEO, the kind of two major elements of thinking about machine learning are this: how can I use machine learning to look at content, generate content, understand content, and make my day-to-day easier? And how is machine learning being used by search engines to make my day-to-day more difficult, right? because kind of I think a lot of SEOs get to machine learning by looking at how search engines are using it and then being like, oh, I can do that too, I guess.
Mm. Can you give an example of how search engines are using it?
Yeah, I mean, Google uses a ton of different algorithms in its algorithm.
Right.
For example, one of the ones that I'm interested in a lot is BERT, which is a trained natural language framework, which is really good at understanding context both ways in a sentence. So it's better at kind of figuring out if, say, you have a noun that, if you write it out, means multiple different things,
mm-hmm.
That have two or more meanings, like get, like I don't get this, could mean I don't understand this, but
okay.
I'm gonna get this could be I'm going to acquire this,
right?
And so BERT can be used to understand both those different meanings.
Well, and if I remember correctly, when BERT was the hot topic, that a lot of the implications of that were keyword research, and a lot of people were talking about, instead of focusing on like specific phrases, it was more about topics and understanding like general concepts and writing about them rather than honing in on specific words, because it's not as literal anymore. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think it kind of frees up a lot of room for people to think. I think it's still important to think about your keywords, because I don't think that Google and other search engines are completely devoid of thinking about keywords.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely think it gives you more flexibility as a content creator and marketer to expand on what kinds of phrases and words you're using and be more naturalistic in your language. I think fundamentally Google really wants to rely more on machine learning, because machines can be considered more neutral, and if it's more of a black box search becomes, the less people are kind of able to game the system, and the more you have to kind of create content that people actually want to see.
Right.
And I think some of the achievements in natural language processing, which is the specific area of machine learning around looking at language, I think that really kind of shows that Google is trying to make the machine understand text more like a human.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think makes it harder in some ways to just prescribe, you know, you should do this if you are creating content for search. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I feel like from the content side, it's exciting, because basically it's Google's never-ending mission to try to make it as
high quality as possible in the SERPs, right? But there are always ways to, and not even in a bad way, like a lot of optimization is done fully with the intention that good content needs to rank, outrank bad, like worse content. But just knowing, like trusting that if I create something that's really fantastic, that it has a chance of ranking is an exciting thing. But yeah, it's hard to have specific rules around what you need to do when things become a little more natural. That makes sense to me. So what you were saying before about how algorithms involves that Google uses in order to rank different things, when SEOs see this and they try to implement similar machine learning techniques internally, is that what you were mentioning before?
Yeah, I think this is something that is a very interesting exercise for people who are just kind of, who want to try and better understand how search works. Because I think some of the things tools can do with content is show you the kind of biases within your content as seen by machine learning algorithms and other kind of machine stuff. Because when you are creating content for search, you're not really creating it for search, right? You're creating it for users.
Mm-hmm.
But search is in between you and those users.
Right.
And so if you use like Python library for text summarization or something like that, you can see this library looks at this content I've created, and from a kind of machine standpoint that's supposed to look at things like patterns and frequently used words, it thinks that my content is about blue widgets and I was writing about green widgets. Mm-hmm. So I need to kind of shift my content more towards that kind of pattern.
That's fascinating. It's like a quality check from the eyes of Google to make sure that you're getting across what you're trying to for the algorithm.
Yeah, because I think, you can ask a Googler and they will always say, just create the best content for your users, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what they want to be surfacing. They want the result of all of the work that they do to be users get to see exactly the answer to their question immediately.
Right.
But they're not there yet. And the machine, like the different machine algorithms and intelligences are all based on certain biases. I mean, honestly, even if it was an algorithm that was a recommendation engine that was equally intelligent to a person, there would still be biases and things that would go into that interpretation, because there would still be a third party between you and your users.
Right. And I'll link in the show notes to this for everyone listening, but Jess has some cool SEO experiments she's done. And I think on your website, you have one kind of about how you can't always 100% trust search results because of different factors like this, where they're trying to, I forgot what you called it, when there's like a gap in information and Google just like provides some sort of an answer, even if it's not the correct one.
Yeah, I try to make a very snappy truthiness. I was pulling in some old Stephen Colbert stuff.
Classic.
But yeah, I mean, one of the things that's kind of fun to do is you can create answers to questions, right? That if the question hasn't been answered on Google, and then it's going to surface those answers, even if they're not true, because it has nothing else to fall back to. And fundamentally, Google wants to surface something as a result rather than nothing, which is how you get like, you know, you can create a page that was like, you know, how do you cook green furry armadillos? You know, those don't exist. But if someone Googles, how do you cook green furry armadillos, you are providing the answer. So even though that isn't true, the pattern of the question and the pattern of the answer match.
It was really fascinating to see you do this because at least in our day-to-day, we're probably searching for things most of the time that have answers. So to see these kind of outlier situations and what can happen in those vacuums was pretty eye-opening. So I appreciate you doing those experiments. And again, I'll link to that stuff that Jess has worked on because I do think it's fascinating. So when people are listening and they're understanding the value of machine learning as being able to analyze your own content through the eyes of the algorithm, not to completely customize it for the algorithm, but to make sure that you're getting your point across in a way that they'll rank you for the appropriate things. How do you go about actually doing that? Like somebody like me who's never done this before, you know, I know there are Python libraries, but like what, how do you even begin?
I think one of the nice things about SEO as a community, especially like technical SEO, is everyone online is just very eager to show off what they've done in Python. So if you go like on Twitter or kind of into some of the communities like the Women in Tech SEO group, mm-hmm. A lot of people will be very excited to share all of their research with you. On Twitter, the SEO Pythonistas Twitter has a lot of these kind of experiments. But I think the places you can really start are just with the more basic SEO tools. A lot of them will do stuff like pull out keywords. So if you want to start kind of looking from a machine point of view, going to like Ahrefs or Moz and seeing what keywords it associates with your page, that can be just a very basic way to do that without even getting into code. But then I think a very fun thing to do as someone who hasn't touched code before is to just get Python and download there's a library in Python called Beautiful Soup that lets you easily parse an HTML page. And I think it can be really eye-opening just to not see your page and your data in a browser, but to see it kind of being scraped headlessly by a machine. I think it can really reframe, oh, you know, I'm seeing it like this, but a machine is seeing it like this. Another thing that can really be useful if you are trying to kind of get this different eye on what your content is I always recommend people use screen readers just to read through content, because it does get you that other point of view of, hey, this is what a machine eye is interpreting for a user, but also you can find accessibility issues. And, you know, there's a free built-in screen reader on Apple for its VoiceOver. And you can download NVDA, the screen reader, on PC as well. And I think that can be a really interesting place to start.
Those are really great suggestions. Yeah, just to kind of get your feet wet in getting a better sense of this perspective, I think is a great first step for people like me who haven't really delved into this too much. Are there any other kind of tangible examples you can give us in terms of the benefits of this type of thing? So you would provide the example of like what keywords that a machine would associate with the piece of content that you're putting together. What other types of insights are available to people who dive into this?
I think another cool place to go is the Google Cloud has a bunch of APIs that are open to the public. And in that, you know, there's entity APIs, right, which goes back to understanding content and like keywords and that kind of thing. But there's also like image recognition APIs that can like look at the images on your page. There's like all sorts of different kind of computing engines that are just open that you can use to kind of get an a machine eye on your site.
So what's the value of this, the image recognition side that you mentioned?
Having unique images on your page is pretty important for kind of bringing, like one of the major ways that Google looks at information is by building out entities, which is like Queen Elizabeth is an entity, right? And so Google knows she, like, all of these are the images that are related to Queen Elizabeth. So she probably looks like this. She's written about by royal family blogs in the UK, so she's probably some sort of royal of some type, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Google have said that they don't use image recognition ML for ranking, and I'm inclined to believe them because that would be very difficult and use a lot of computing power, but I don't think it means that they're never going to. And I think, for example, Chrome can, if you're a screen reader user on Chrome, you can send images to Google to be labeled instead of relying on the alt text that exists, because a lot of people, the alt text isn't good.
Mm-hmm.
So for a screen reader user, that's a really frustrating thing. So I think using the Vision API can really help you understand how the images relate to your content from a machine perspective, and kind of help align images to the entities that you're trying to get at. I also think eventually probably Google will be using image recognition for at least some images and ranking. It is a like developing field, but it's also like visual search is a major element of search in general now. And it's kind of expanding out to things like being able to like apps for like IKEA that allow you to place items in your house in a virtual environment just so you can see what it is. Like that's kind of machine learning and vision experience. That's the kind of thing that AI and machine learning can help you create and understand. That was a very rambly answer. I have a lot of feelings about.
No, that was really interesting. It seems like worst case scenario, you better understand how your images relate to your content from an algorithm perspective or a machine learning perspective. Best case scenario, you're setting up your content to be better ranked in the future if image recognition becomes more of a factor.
And I think, you know, there are some other useful things that can be done. Like you can automatically label and detect images. You shouldn't necessarily do that for accessibility, but if you have like an image site, if you're a Pexels or a Getty Images, and you don't want to label all of the images on your site by hand, you can definitely use Vision API to do that kind of thing.
Oh yeah, that makes sense. At scale, you're right. Yeah. It seems like a lot of time. Is there anything else you would add to people who are beginners in this or trying to understand the value of this that maybe we haven't talked about yet?
Yeah, I mean, I think in some ways it's very intimidating, especially if you feel like you're a content person. But like, I mean, my background before I got into more technical SEO was in I was an international politics undergrad. And I think having kind of a creative background can be really useful when you approach using machines and machine learning, because it lets you kind of parse it more holistically and use it in really interesting ways. I think if this is the kind of thing that you're curious about, going and experimenting and trying to create something useful is like a good first step. And there are tons of resources that exist to help get people started. And if it doesn't interest you, there are tons of resources that will just do it for you, which is also nice.
Yeah, that's great advice. We're already nearing the end of the episode. So what I ask everybody is a completely tangential question. It's not even tangential, it's just completely off the cuff, where it's about creativity. In 2021, I'm asking every guest on the show something about creativity, which is basically, how are you able to stay creative these days? Where are you drawing inspiration from when you do these, you know, whether it's when you do this, these experiments in SEO or just in your day-to-day life, what is giving you that creative inspiration?
Yeah, I think seeing other people's experiments really inspires me. Like, kind of my interactions with other people is always really inspiring. I'm also a big nerd, and so I do, like, I have a couple of Dungeons and Dragons campaigns that I always come away from with machine learning and Python ideas, and I don't know why, but, like, sitting at my desk, staring at a Skype window and trying to, and repeatedly rolling really badly while pretending to be an elf, maybe it's just stepping away from thinking about it for a bit. I'm always like, I have to write this down right now because I'm going to forget it otherwise.
It's funny you said that, because I started playing D&D during the quarantine and tweeted like a couple months ago about if anybody in marketing would join. And now there's like a whole, I'm in a campaign with a bunch of marketing folks and it is so much fun. But it's so interesting that that has been an outlet for you. Like you said, a few other people on the show have said, just removing yourself from the day-to-day and entering a different headspace has really helped them just come up with ideas about all kinds of stuff.
I mean, I really like reading other people's blog posts about the weird stuff they make. Someone who I always talk about with regards to machine learning and learning more about machine learning, which is a real sentence, is Janelle C. Shane. She is a fantastic author, and she is a research scientist in machine learning and creates a bunch of weird machine learning projects in her free time. Like, she'll feed in a bunch of recipes to a machine learning model and see what comes out. And I think kind of experiments like that can really unlock ways of thinking about content and how things work that you might not think about without that first interaction.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of expanding what you realize is even possible with this sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So on a similar note, knowing the objective of the show is to help growth marketers, content marketers, kind of get more value out of their work, who would you recommend to be guests on future episodes?
Oh, man. That's immediately putting me in a tough spot. I feel like I'm gonna be here for the rest of the day, like just saying names. But if you're interested in more SEO-ish folks, I think Aleda Solis. I don't know if
we had her on. She was incredible.
Yeah, let me know if you've had any of these people on in your archive. I haven't gone all the way back.
No, that's fine.
Have you had Jamie Indiga, Jamma Vaults?
No, Jamie I want Indiga? To. I need to ask her. I don't know why I haven't yet, because I've had that on my mind for weeks now. So thank you for that reminder. I do need to reach out to her.
And then Arij Abu Ali.
Oh, yeah, Arij is awesome.
She rocks. I think Amanda Jordan would be a good get. She's really good with like specifically local marketing and local SEO.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love this part of the show because I know most people listening are probably like, okay, we listen to this every time, but it's also like a good list of people to follow.
Yes. Yeah. Full, at the very least, go follow on them on Twitter because they all rock.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, yeah. Jess, thank you so much for walking us through kind of an intro to this. I find it so interesting. So it's so helpful to get the rundown and some suggestions on how to dive in. Really appreciate you taking the time.
It was really fun to be here. And it's, I, again, as everyone in my life can tell you, I can't shut up about this stuff. So it's, you've kind of given people a bit of a break from me constantly talking about machine learning.
Well, you are welcome to come back on and keep talking about it because yeah. It's super helpful. If you've listened to this and you want even more tips, sign up for our podcast newsletter by going to the podcast page on the Fractal website. And if you've learned anything from this show, we'd love it if you'd subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and leave a review. Finally, if you have feedback, suggestions, ideas, suggestions on silly YouTube channels, or anything you'd like to share with me, shoot me an email at amanda@frac.tl. I'm a shameless extrovert who would love to hear from you. Thank you to Sean Kelly for podcast music and editing, and to Joao Pereira for logo design. And thank you, dear listener. I hope you'll join us next time.